to a very mindful podcast. I'm your host, Rillian, and in this episode, I'm joined by meditation practitioner and guide, and a very good friend of mine, Noah Mora. We start by highlighting what Saji Yoga is, which is the particular branch of meditation that he guides, after which we return to mindfulness and meditation more broadly. We explore why meditate in the first place, and what students specifically can get out of it, how to understand detachment, how mindfulness helps develop emotional intelligence. We end by discussing how stress is the bigger problem, and reveal practical tips on how to counter them with methods that complement meditation well. By the way, sorry in advance for bad audio quality on my part. I recorded in an auditorium, which apparently was not the best decision. So I apologize for any disturbances by my microphone, but it does get better as the podcast progresses, so it should be all right. Anyways, here's our conversation. I hope you get as much out of it as I did. Enjoy. I'm here with my good friend Noah, and in this episode, we want to focus on how meditation and mindfulness and maybe even other forms of meditation, how they kind of flow into benefiting students especially, but also just people generally. And I'm actually really excited for this episode because, well, first of all, I get to talk to my friend Noah for an hour, and you know, with COVID and stuff, it's not always a given that you get to talk to some friends that you haven't spoken to in a while. But also, I'm actually really glad that you can make it, because I heard that you're going on a meditation retreat.
That's true. Yeah.
Is it tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Nice. In Italy, is it?
In Italy, yes. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I wish you all the fun in the world, even though meditation retreats are probably less about the fun aspect of it and more about, you know, like becoming enlightened and equanimous. But
enlightenment has a lot to do with just enjoying. So
definitely. Yeah. So yeah, enjoy that. But also thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the intro. I really also really appreciate to just have this space to talk to you and have this conversation. But also, yeah, thanks for the intro and very glad to be on the podcast.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I know you quite well, but a lot of our listeners won't know you, right? Could you maybe introduce yourself briefly and say how it is that you've become interested in meditation? Maybe give your background on how you relate to meditation.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, as you said, I'm Noah, and I mean, meditation sort of has been part of my life, at times more in the background for most of my life, but it's been become more present in my teenage years. And so my personal story is that my parents met on a meditation retreat, the very retreat we're going to tomorrow.
You're returning to the same one. Is it a form of like a tradition in your family?
Yes. Yeah.
Nice.
We go there at least a year. So yeah, it was until I was like 14 or so that I wasn't really so. I didn't get it. Like, what is all about? and what's so special about it? But we went oftentimes to this retreat, and there's like, many other kids. So it was always enjoyable. Like, there was like an atmosphere. But with like 14, I had like my first like deeper meditation, where I experienced like just like this inner sanctuary and how rich it is once you tap into like your deeper self or your more authentic self. And that's where, yeah, my personal meditation journey started, where it wasn't like my parents like, you have to meditate or something.
your parents indoctrinated you from a very young age.
No, they never did. I'm very thankful. They were always quite chill, quite right. Open, and gave me the space to explore it for myself.
Well, those things tend to backfire when your parents impose things on you. It always takes a bit of time for you to discover it yourself. I played the piano for 8 years, and for those 8 years of like lessons, I hated every minute of it. But then when I stopped, because I wanted to stop from 4 years onwards, right. And my mom was like, no, you're not stopping. And I had this little crisis moment, but then it was fine continuing. I was just looking forward for it to end. And then basically when it ended, a year after, during the summer, I started picking it up again just by myself, just kind of like going over the piano. I hadn't touched the piano in like a year, and I couldn't be happier about it. But then when I retouched it, it was like this whole rediscovery. So it's good that your parents didn't impose it on you, and that you were able to discover it. But especially meditation, right? Because it's a personal journey.
Yeah, it's something so personal, so personal. Right. So yeah, I can relate. So it was really like that. I was able to discover it for myself. And yeah, so 14, I started, and then 17, I had like a very strong moment. I was sitting next to a river meditating, and I just felt like so much joy and love. And I was like, I want to bring this into the world. And that's, it was also in this retreat. And after that, I started to give meditation classes at my school, high school. That was 5 years ago, actually. And ever since, I've been giving weekly meditation classes at school and now at uni. And now I'm here with you guys.
In one of your classes that you gave at LUC, the university where we both study, right? I went to one of them, and I think that was the first time I had meditated for like an hour, because it was, I think it was an hour long or maybe even longer, because we also talked about our experiences after. And I remember that evening.
Yeah, the whole session just, was an hour.
Yeah, I remember that evening just like, I don't know, everything felt so calm within me. Up until then, I had been interested in meditation, and I was, you know, I had meditated for maybe 10 to 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes maximum at a time, which like, but at that time was like really, really an accomplishment for me, you know, because sitting down 20 minutes and not, you know, paying no attention to everything surrounding you, just kind of tapping into yourself, it's challenging at first, right? It's not easy. Hence this podcast to kind of, you know, facilitate that transition for people.
No, I'm really happy to hear that. I guess it's also maybe a bit, you know, easier when there's a guidance. But I'm really happy that there was this calm that stayed with you, that really really opens my heart. It's all I ever wanted to share. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you just said that there's this calm, right? And I haven't meditated for an hour, just because, you know, it's I think when you start out, it's good to start slowly and build up.
Of course,
the habit,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
It's as much as like maybe 10 minutes a day can already make such a big difference, because from 0 to 10 minutes means the world, right? It opens this door that you didn't know existed, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we all know it. It takes 21 days to build a new habit or something. So the easier you make it at the beginning, the better or the easier it is to stick with it. So I would even say if 10 minutes is too much, like do 2 minutes a day.
Yeah.
After waking up, before going to bed, and then you can expand. Like once you tap into that space, it will just naturally expand because you want to stay in that space.
And the difference between having a guide and not having a guide, I started by myself, just meditating
alone, no voice, just having read things online where I was like, this is interesting, I should try this. And <Right. laughs> and it was a disaster. I talk about it in my first theory episode here on a Very Mindful podcast. But it did not work. And and then I discovered an app that helped me get through it, because just having someone tell you what to do, why you're doing it, being reminded why you're doing it, which is also why we have these theory episodes on this podcast, to kind of help people understand, like, what is it? Because if you're by yourself, it's not always obvious what you're supposed to be feeling or your expectations. Are you supposed to be like completely just enlightened from like one meditation session to the next? What should you expect? And the first meditation sessions that you'll do very often won't be the most, let's say, fulfilling. I mean, they might give you an idea of what it is, but it really, after, actually, this is a question I'd like to ask you. After how much time did you start being like, after how much time meditating, did you start being like, okay, this is something that I really want to dive deeper into? Because you said the first time you had a memorable and significant experience was at the age of 14, right? Which is actually really early, and because for me it was in my 20s. So
yeah, we had meditations with like family and friends before I was 14. I never really enjoyed it. I was just like sitting there, like not seeing the point. And it was like it was a big collective meditation at that retreat, and it was just this energy that, you know, that rises when there's like a lot of people having their attention sort of on themselves, but in a collective mood. It was just like, so it was so uplifting. I just got a glimpse into what it means to be like thoughtless and present and just enjoying and growing from within. I think that sparked my interest.
Mm-hmm.
I felt how meditation is a tool to grow within. Well, not a tool, a path to grow within and to discover oneself.
Mm.
So I guess it coincided with this, if with my desire, my personal journey to grow and to discover myself. So meditation was just one of the paths.
And can I ask you, what is the type of meditation that you practice the most often? Because I think we had a conversation before this podcast, and you said that it was not mindfulness. It wasn't Vipassana meditation.
Yeah, it's different. The key difference is that the mindfulness or Vipassana, you just try to observe, like there are thoughts or bodily reactions. You observe them and try to not get too entangled, and you see them in a not judgmental manner. What I practice is called Sahaja Yoga meditation, and it's not to be confused with physical yoga. It's funny because this word yoga is Sanskrit and means union with the divine, actually.
Well, I didn't know that.
Also this also those physical exercises where meant to achieve this union. It was you could say one other type of meditation to facilitate our connection with a higher power. And Sahaja Yoga means born within or spontaneous. What happens in Sahaja Yoga or in this form of meditation is that we connect back to our deepest, most authentic self, and then an energy that is born within and that can awaken and flow spontaneously. You know, many tradition had many names for it. it's called, for example, in the Chinese tradition, it's called qi. If that is more a term people can relate to. So it's really this flow of this internal energy that can be tapped into. And once this flow starts, this awakening within starts, it's like like a sun starting to shine within you. And when this energy ascends, it has the ability to, like the sun dissolving the fog in the natural world, this light within can dissolve the fog of your mind. And it can help you achieve this experience of thoughtlessness. So you're not just like sitting there and observing, but you're there, and there is, at some point, with a bit of practice, it's not so easy, but with a bit of practice, you tap into a state of thoughtlessness where there's no thoughts, or at least experience yourself without thoughts. And that is like sort of the crucial difference between mindfulness and mind empty Satya Yoga meditation.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, I'm sure we can talk about, like, we can devote an entire episode alone to exploring Saji Yoga. Just for the people listening, Saji Yoga, how is Saji spelled?
So it's Sahaja, and then yoga, like.
Okay.
Yoga.
Yeah, and again, for people listening, not your traditional yoga.
So maybe for people who are interested, there's a very beautiful, accessible website with dozens of meditations catered to your needs on wemeditate.com.
Good. I'll link it up in the description before, you know, exploring also maybe mindfulness and meditation for beginners. Because for me, at least, this meditation starts really by observing, by realizing that there's actually something to be experienced, or that you can turn experience upon itself, right? And once you realize this opens the door to just a vast universe, right, that you can explore and for people to get into, right?
Yeah, you see it, like the key is your desire to explore.
Yeah.
And to know that there's something behind the door. For sure, yes.
Maybe speaking more broadly, so not only the Saji Yoga tradition, but let's just say meditation in general.
Meditation in general, yes.
So why is it that someone, and especially students maybe, why is it that someone would be interested in doing meditation from a skeptical perspective?
Perspective.
Yeah, so like how, like...
So not like personal growth.
I mean, as in, let's say, let's try to sell meditation to someone who's never meditated before, maybe.
Okay.
Like, what is it that we're doing, really?
Well, it has so many benefits on so many levels. So if you ask me to sell it, like I would have to ask you, like, to whom are we selling it?
Good, you're a good salesman. But no, let's say you're talking to a student.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big one. It's increased focus. It's having this one moment or like two moments during the day where you can just like tune out the noise and tune in with yourself and have that space that you can always return to, like a safe haven or a sanctuary within, can be very, very valuable, because, you know, student life is very stressful. I mean, life in general is very stressful. So to have that moment of rest, of calm, of recharge can really set, you know, your tone for the day. And it is a moment where you can just you know, you can align yourself. Okay, what do I want to do today? What do I want to feel today? With what energy do I want to start? With what intention do I want to start this day? So it is an opportunity to focus your attention. Sorry. Be present, have that focus, and yeah, it's just this recharge, and also emotionally, like constant thinking, worrying, stressing, that releases so many like harmful chemicals into your body. It makes your whole system like less operational. So meditation also from a very sciencey perspective, that's like so many good things.
Right.
Reducing all those hormones and bringing in the good ones. Good states of meditation are linked to the release of endorphins and dopamines. So right. What you get when you eat chocolate or something. So it
floods like your brain with good chemicals, and
it flushes out the bad ones and brings in the good ones.
I think you raised a lot of points that I'd love to dive deeper into. I mean, I want to raise two points and then you can tell me what you think about it, but yeah, number one, stress. Like that is, I feel like if there's one word that kind of defines how people act from a day-to-day basis in our busy, busy world, it would be, okay, what do I have to worry about now? Right? That's the question that I would think is on most people's minds the most. So stress is a big factor, right? And you also raised the point that, you know, we have this inner voice always talking to us, this constant distraction, kind of. And the other thing that I wanted to say was that it seems to most people that the outside world dictates how you feel inside, right? If something good happens to you in the outside world, that means you're going to feel good. And if there's an expectation, let's say that's not met, or for instance, I was planning on playing football with a bunch of friends a few days ago, and it turned out that I didn't check my phone in the last minute and they cancelled it, and I went to the football field by myself, and I was super, you know, I was like super sad that
enthusiastic
because I wanted to, I was so preparing myself mentally to play football, and it didn't happen, and that just made me sad. And for some reason, I wasn't able to get over that mood immediately. Like, it stuck with me at least for the next hour or 2 hours, right? And so, you know, these outside things that you don't control kind of dictates your life. And if you think about it, that's just kind of, I mean, that's not very efficient. That's not very, that's not ideal, right? You wouldn't want just luck and things that you don't control to determine how you feel. And I think this duality between the world and our mind, most people see like this fixed line and one determines the other, but actually the line is very blurred, right? We don't, there's not necessarily that big of a distinction, because what you see is usually, I mean, these things are interlinked. What you see usually determines how you feel, and vice versa, right? How you feel determines what you see. So I wanted to raise that because there's this book for anyone who's interested. It's a great book. It's very like accessible, and it has such a calm tone. And there's even this art by a famous artist who intersperses it. It's called The Things You Can See Only When You Slow Down, and it's by this guy. This actually he's a I believe he's also a monk. He's a monk and an academic. Not, you don't see that often.
Oh, that's... Yeah, that's...
I think it's a South Korean who's called Haemin Sunim. So the things you can see only when you slow down, and that subtitle is How to Be Calm in a Busy World. And he opens this book. He opens it by just saying in a few pages, he says, we have to identify that in the end of the day, our mind is what determines our world. Like, our mind is our world. True. Right?
Yeah.
And once we can understand that, then, you know, it makes no sense to not train our minds. It makes no sense to just ignore how much power our mind has over what we experience, right?
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Because I wanted to add to what you said. It's, you know, our experience of the world is 90% what happened. No, 10% what happens and 90% how we react to it.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, and these 90% how we react is based on the mental filter that we put. It's based on the filter that we choose to see the world through. So it's really how you train your mind. If you train your mind for calm and peace, then you're gonna see the world and what is happening in a calm and peaceful manner. If, however, you let the stress condition your mind, you're gonna see everything what happens through like a stressful lens.
Yeah, and in this book actually he mentions this example. Like the Buddha, in the eyes of the Buddha, everyone is a Buddha. And in the eyes of a pig, everyone is a pig.
Right.
Right. So I mean, you can replace pig by a stressful person. So in the eyes of a stressful person, everything is stressful, right?
Yeah.
So the lens in which you see things can make such a huge difference.
Yeah, it shapes the perception of the world. Like the world is how you see it.
Exactly. And so, yeah. And also this distinction between the external and the internal, why would you try to control your external surrounding to please your mind rather than just go right to the source, go to your mind and see what's there. And then you'll see that everything else kind of falls into place in a way. Right.
Yeah. True. It's also what you have control over. Like, you have control over your reactions,
right?
Or to a higher degree than to what happens in the world.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, the Stoics kind of pointed out this fact, right? Like, and you know, the Buddhists and these traditions go on so far because these lessons have been so useful to people.
Yeah.
Right.
It's such a fundamental truth. Yeah.
Exactly. So the first, I would say the first thing to notice when, as you're meditating is, wow, like there's this whole world in my mind that kind of, that if I just kind of tap into that, then I can see my external surrounding change. And I can give like a more concrete example, because again, this sounds so wishy-washy if you just use the theoretical language. But like, if you just say, for instance, you know, you're sitting in the bus, and let's say you have this perspective on people that is like menacing. Like, let's say maybe you've been bullied in your childhood or something like that, and that gives you an impression that everyone is out to get you. You know, so then what's going to happen is, what if someone sits next to you? You're gonna feel very encumbered and. You might think, oh, like I should better keep to my wallet in my left pocket and my phone in my right pocket, because I could be those could be stolen at any moment, right? People are out to get me. But if you have another perspective, where let's say you're in the elevator and you have, you know, someone, a stranger,
you could be in the same bus.
Yeah, or you could be in the same bus, right? Then if you have the perspective that, oh no, people have this innate goodness in them. Right? Then If you have that perspective, and you can actually, by training your mind, you can actually train yourself to believe that, because it's not like one is wrong and one is right. It's like, it's more complicated than that. It's what do you decide to focus on? The goodness in people, or the evil in people. And if you decide to look at the goodness, then that's going to be reflected back at you, right? You're going to have
back at you.
Yeah, you're going to talk to the stranger, and if you have that predisposition, you're going to talk to them in a nice way, and they're going to react nicely. Whereas if you think that they're bad, you talk to them in a bad way, they talk to you back.
They're gonna,
right? In the same energy. Right?
They're gonna resonate in the same energy. Yeah. If you encounter them, if you see the world with love and kindness, you're gonna get love and kindness back.
Right, and that really is. I mean, you know, it's a very simple example, but it makes such a huge difference, right, in your day to day life. And if only, you know, meditating 10 minutes at the start of your day can create this kind of shift where you just remind yourself of that, of being positive, or believing in the goodness in people, then that can make the difference.
You know, and maybe on a more practical note, how does it work? Like, it's setting the intention. I want to be loving. I want to be caring. And this is how I want to see the world. So you can use meditation as a tool. But you know, you said, oh, there's like evil people. I don't believe there's evil people. It's just how stress and pain formed them to think and feel and act in a certain manner. And it's
right.
It's like, you know, hurt people hurt people. So, and what I believe is that meditation is a tool to, you know, to tune in with yourself and see and feel your true nature, apart from all the stresses in your life, apart from your life story, apart from any kinds of wounds. So you can develop this empathy with yourself. And don't let yourself be dictated by those outside stressors.
Mm-hmm.
So if everyone were to meditate, we would all be like so much more empathetic, mm-hmm. and patient and understanding. So there just wouldn't be so much evil, because the evil is just what is evil is just our reaction to stress.
Right.
Or unprocessed or badly processed stress that accumulates and then gets out.
Yeah, and I see a clear connection between the stress that you feel and how dictated you are, or how engaged you feel in just everything that happens to you. Everything just happens to you. There's no time, you're just on autopilot.
It pushes your buttons like bing 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 bing.
Right, exactly. And there's no time to actually think, whoa, get some distance from everything, and then reflect on that. And that's why, like, I think a second thing that people can expect when, you know, after they meditate for a while, is that they no longer take themselves so seriously. Because, I mean, you can still, obviously things still matter to you. That's not like that. That's where we draw the line between wishy-washy and, you know, actual things that can help you, is that, okay, we don't give up on, you don't have to give up on your friends. You don't have to give up on your family. Yeah. You don't have to give up on any, all those things are still important. Your health is still important. Physical health, everything else is still in place, but.
Yeah. You still live your life. It's
exactly.
You say something very important about you, it's detachment, what you talk about, right?
Yes.
In other words, and there's a beautiful way to put it, detachment doesn't mean that you own nothing. It's like, if I meditate, if I choose like to meditate, I have to give up everything. No, it doesn't mean that you give up, that you own nothing. It means that nothing owns you. You know?
I like that.
You still have your career, you still have your studies, you have your friends, you have your life path, you have what happens to you, but it doesn't own you.
That's a very good way of putting it. Yeah.
So meditation is a tool to not be owned, but be in charge yourself, to become your own master.
Right.
To put it into like more.
Yeah. No, because I mean, obviously the word detachment, you know, has so much weight in so many traditions that use meditation, right? The detachment is something, it's very difficult to understand because it is kind of paradoxical, as you say, because you're no longer so dictated by everything, and yet they still matter. How does that work, right? But I think you said it really well, that, you know, you don't own, as in, it's not like you don't own anything. It's that nothing owns you. And that is really, I would say, a key towards why you would want to meditate. And then another key is also maybe best termed as like emotional intelligence, right? So once you realize that, first of all, you have to realize that, okay, there's all these things happening subconsciously or consciously, and I wasn't aware of them before. I didn't, for instance, I was a minute ago, I was talking to you in this podcast and the words were just kind of flowing out of my mouth. And then now I'm using the second to, okay, be aware of myself. How do I feel? Do I feel stressed? Do I feel calm? Am I enjoying myself right now? Or am I hurrying towards the end? You know, this is the first step. And then from that, from identifying how you feel, because it sounds harder than you think. You don't always know how you feel, right?
Right. So if you don't pay attention to...
Exactly. So if you're constantly on autopilot, you know, you don't know how you feel. So one, center your attention back on yourself, how you feel. And then from there, you can recognize that, okay, these things that I feel, they don't actually define me. They don't actually... It's not like this, you know, it's not like my experience is just solid. It's actually very liquid. Like things arise and go away. You feel angry one moment, and then you feel something completely different another moment, right? And these things just happen to you. And by becoming aware of that, you can be like, okay, these things, I don't have to be angry right now. I can actually choose how long I want to be angry for. Not that, you know, other emotions don't have their role. Like every emotion, it's good to feel sad from time to time, right? It's not like you're suppressing any emotions. And that's also something I...
Yeah, you have to live through the emotions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's something that I also mentioned in the first theory episode, is that, you know, it's not like you're lying to yourself. It's actually,
I have to be happy every moment.
Exactly. It's you're paying closer attention to what you're feeling. Yeah. And by doing that, you create already this distance from what you're feeling. I had there's a very funny comedian. I can't remember his name for the life of me, but I watch a lot of stand-up comedy. And this guy was saying how he was getting beat up by these people. I can't remember in which context, but he was saying that, and he was saying how while he was getting beat up, he was already thinking of the next jokes that he would make on this experience. And that meant he actually didn't experience the pain of getting beat up. He was internally, he was like, oh, this is great material. Keep going. So that alone, already this distance of like reflecting on yourself rather than just being you, just kind of going behind you're realizing that what you're experiencing is just an experience, right? And that distance already made such a big difference. And so I loved how that kind of really demonstrated.
Yeah,
this.
No, it's a superb example. It's just seeing your life as if it was happening on a stage, and you're just the spectator. So you're sort of less entangled emotionally, mentally with what is happening.
Yeah. Another way of putting it would be like seeing your life as if you're kind of watching a movie unfold, in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
And if it's a scary movie and you don't like scary movies, you can walk out of the theater. You can just recognize, okay, this is just a movie. It's just a movie. Create this distance and then be like, okay, what do I want to be? Which movie do I want to be watching? You know, which perspective do I want to take on?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Or I mean, rather than maybe abandoning on the scary movie, you can just say in that moment, okay, it's going to be scary, but it's just a movie. Like, we're good. I can use that distance.
Or you can change the plot. You can rewrite the plot at any given moment, right?
Right.
You don't have to, like, passively watch what is happening. You can, like, detached watch. Yeah. But if you want to change something, it's also in your power to change your internal direction and your perception.
Right. And so this is all to show that, so in the point that I was making about emotional intelligence, the first step is, okay, let's identify what I'm feeling. And then two, recognizing that doesn't define you, there's a space between what you're feeling and you, right?
And who you are,
right.
Yes.
And then the third step would be then once you've, you know, gotten some experience with meditation, you can't do it right away, right? It takes training. It's a muscle. Is to then say, okay, is this the best way I should react right now? Is this the way, if I could script my experience for the next few minutes, is this how I want to be spending my time? Feeling anxious, feeling, you know, feeling angry, or how the Dalai Lama terms it as like destructive emotions, right? These emotions, there are some emotions that are useful, like, but then there are certain emotions that are just destructive because they don't serve your best interest, right? You would be better off not feeling them in this moment.
Yeah, they destroy your body,
right? And stress is a big one because stress and anxiety, because it's like feeling stressed for a short amount of time is very good. Evolutionarily speaking, it makes sense. Like, if you're in danger, it's good to know how to act quickly, choose a path, dedicate yourself to it, boom, and then within the few minutes, you're out of that situation of stress, and then your body rewards your body rewards you with all these chemicals saying, hey, good job, you avoided stress. And we were actually really programmed.
Well, you survived.
Yes, you survived, right? And so your body is saying, hey, let's remember how we acted like this because that's a good idea. And it's just to draw on a tangent here. That's why exercise is so important, because we're very trained when we're stressed to do something physically to relieve that stress. And we don't do that anymore, right? We're just kind of sitting with our stress all day, not relieving it physically through exercise. And so it's not going away, right? So to say, meditation is not, I mean, it is
not
a great way to relieve yourself of that and realize, okay, wait, do I need to be stressed right now? What do I want to focus on? Exercise is a big one. And so that's why I'm saying we don't have to give up on everything.
It is. Yeah. It is. No, absolutely. Exercise is a big one. And, you know, if someone is super stressed, like, it wouldn't make much sense to meditate. Like, as you said, it would make most sense to do physical exercise because that actually flushes, mm-hmm. Like, those stress hormones out of your body, like, immediately, or reduce it. So it's, yeah, also super healthy.
And of course it's not a dichotomy. It's not like you have to choose one or the other, right?
No, of course. Yeah. So it's physical exercise is more direct, changes the hormones, the chemistry of your body in a very immediate manner. And meditation can help change your brain structure and your thinking patterns. So it's like you're building something sustainable,
right?
When you meditate, and you know, actually there's so much research on meditation nowadays, and what's been found, it's connected to the like it reduces the size of the part of the brain which is called the amygdala, which is connected to stress and anxiety. So it reduces that one and increases the gray matter of the brain, and yeah, many other changes in the physiology, which all help to experience less stress, more emotional stability.
So that it becomes easier over
self-control. Exactly. So meditation helps you to develop a very good peaceful autopilot. And yeah, but with all the stresses in our lives, I mean, back in the days we had tigers and we had to like hunt. So like the stress we felt in our body was appropriate. But you know, now what was released in our bodies thousands of years ago when we saw, you know, a life-threatening tiger is now released when there's an assignment due this weekend and a presentation and hear a message coming and disturbing news coming, and it's like all those constant stresses are really, really difficult to cope with. And our body thinks he's like in a cage with a tiger, but it's, you know, it's just an assignment. So it's really important, as you said, like to be aware of how we work and to develop this emotional intelligence and to have mechanisms to cope with.
And it's not just through meditation, let's say in the beginning of the day. There's actually in this book, this other book that I have with me here. I really enjoyed reading this one. So it is called Emotional Intelligence. That's where I got my understanding of it from, by Daniel Goleman. And he describes a method. It's called the SOCS method. And it basically says SOCS, right? SOCS. One, the situation that you're in. Tune in. What situation are you in? What are you feeling, right? Number two, there's the O, is the options. Okay. How could you be feeling right now? Is the way you're feeling, is it the most appropriate? Is it the most useful, right?
Productive, beneficial. Yeah,
beneficial. And then the C is, okay, what are the consequences to me acting in those different ways? And then S is solution. So then, okay, what am I going to choose based on those consequences? Let's say you're in an argument with a spouse or a friend or something, right? And you're definitely getting way too emotionally involved, right? And someone, let's say someone's feelings is about to get hurt, and you're thinking, okay, S, how am I feeling? And then you tune in that moment, and you're like, okay, no, this discussion is not going well. I feel stressed. Right, I feel panicky. Then options. How could I be acting right now? Do I have to be continuing down this road, or do I have other options, such as maybe say hi? So like I think this debate is a really interesting one, or like I get why you're mad, or I understand that this is like a bit of a touchy subject for you, and the consequence to acting that way would be to put your ego aside. Say, hey, maybe let's talk about it another time. Maybe this isn't the right moment. Not because I don't think what you're saying is constructive, just because it's also this technique is also tied to like nonviolent communication, right? It's like, okay,
right, yeah, sounds a bit like
right, exactly. And to be like, okay, do I have to be arguing right now, and can I not just like maybe move on to something else? And so then if that's the best solution, then you do that. And in that moment, in those, you know, 20 seconds that you've taken, or 10 seconds in your mind to be like, maybe this isn't the best way to do things, you've changed something radical. Like you've gone from a scenario where rather than just be controlled by your frustration in the conversation or something, and you just, your words just flow out and you're not paying attention to how the other person is going to react to them, and you're going to feel really bad for the next 2 hours, right? Then or the next right. day or the next week, who knows, right? So instead of doing that, you've gone from that to a scenario where, you know, you're both going to feel much better the second you've uttered those words. And that radical change, so it's like, socially it makes a huge difference, personally it makes a huge difference. And so already in that moment, so you can take moments in the day, throughout the day, and remind yourself to be mindful, right? To reflect,
to be present, to pay attention,
and see what the best way to act from here is. Right.
That is beautiful. Yeah, it's like a compass for life, even.
Right, and it makes such a small. So again, socks. Just think of your socks. That's the socks.
Beautiful.
Method. Yeah,
I learned something today. Thank you. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. So this emotional intelligence is a huge aspect of it. But also, so let's say for students who are listening to this, right? So we've clarified, you know, why meditate, what is so beneficial about it, what to expect, right? But also, so that stress is this huge aspect of our lives. And actually, by meditating, we said that we shrink the area of the brain, physically shrink it, which is insane, right? But we've shown this, right, scientifically.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, everyone should be meditating, for crying out loud, if that's the case, right? How come we're not? And so there's that. So there's the stress aspect and the anxiety aspect, which has been so important to students in times of COVID, where, let's say, schoolwork was like the only thing that they could control in a world that they couldn't control through COVID, right?
Right.
So you become so obsessive about your grades and your assignments and because that's the only thing that you're doing, really. And so,
right, yeah,
there's that. And there's also, I wanted to, because this one is a huge one as well, and that's the procrastination aspect, this aspect of distracting yourself endlessly in a way that, again, very counterproductive, right? You're not strengthening the part of your brain saying, it's going to be fine, we can do this. And then get into workflow, because also, this is a very important thing. From the moment you think about work and the moment you start working, that's the most difficult part. It's not actually when you're working. When you're working, you actually get into a flow. And if you this counts for students, this also counts for people in the workplace. If you ask people before working, if you ask them, hey, like, how much do you enjoy your job and things like that? They go, oh, I would rather be doing something else. I really hate it and I don't get a lot of freedom. But then actually, it's very interesting. When you monitor them while they're working, they're actually really happy, because we like to be focused on something, on a task and fulfill it. We like the aspect of... So students is the same. Like, we love to pretend that that's not the case, that, oh, bloody assignment that I have to finish. Like, it's going to be awful.
No, yeah, if it gets you in a flow, if it absorbs your attention, you're there with your attention, with your if your presence, it's quite enjoyable. Yeah.
Yeah, and getting into workflow is one of the most enjoyable things, really, about this. And that's also something. Now, I'm running out of time, but I would like to ask you maybe like a last question, just more practically.
Of course.
If you could... if you could give some practical advice of how you survived not only COVID and your assignments, but just generally, how could students maybe practically implement a few habits or a few techniques to, you know, better their life?
Meditate in the morning. Start with 2 minutes.
I think we've
established
that, huh?
Yeah. Just take a few minutes to, like, you know, just breathe in for a few seconds, breathe out, give yourself that moment. What I've come across so many times is the importance of gratefulness. When you're grateful, you cannot feel any other emotions. So ending your day with three things you're grateful for is like a super way, or also waking up with things you're grateful for and actually journal them, write them down, is a very powerful way, often regarded as like the highway to happiness. Focusing on all the good in your life, and yeah, see friends, make strong social connections, be there for each other, and develop a routine that works for you, because routine gives stability.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So establish as much like control in your daily life as you can, and be grateful for what you have, and put your attention on the positive.
Great. And if I can add to that list, I have two more things.
Please.
Or three more.
Please.
Which is tidy your room. Like, you know, if you have a tidy space, you will, it's crazy how much that also influences your mind. Like a tidy room can really make things feel tidy in your mind as well. And also the importance of like sleep habits.
Sleep.
It's a big one. It's a huge one. And really the difference between not sleeping.
Also students will not want to hear that, but the sleep from 10 to like midnight or 1 a.m. is like the most important. Like,
right. They count
there's
double,
like a
right?
Huge release. Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge release of, I forgot the name of the hormone, but like crucial for regeneration. So get those, like these 2 hours before midnight, and exercise if you didn't want to mention that as well.
So yeah, thank you so much, Noah, for sharing those things with us.
It's been my pleasure.
I can attest that these things really can change a lot for you. So thanks for coming on. It's been such a great conversation. I hope people find it useful.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable.
Yeah, hope to see you soon.
Yes, hope to see you very soon. Yeah. And I hope your listeners can take something away from that and benefit as well.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode or found it useful, then please share it with a friend. If you're interested in knowing more about the podcast or other projects undertaken by the Center for Innovation at Leiden University, then you can find us under Center for Innovation with the number 4 in it, .org. So centerforinnovation.org. See you in the next episode of A Very Mindful Podcast.